Hey, this is Ryan LaCroix of the Oklahoma Rock Show. I recently had a chance to sit down with Nick Lay and Ryan Hendricks of Color Music and talk about their new 9-song album, Swimsuit, their first album since 2014, and their album, May You Marry Rich. We'll talk about the new album, Moving On Without a Label, and the subsequent unique release process for this album, and how things have changed in a band that's been together for 15 years or so. We'll also talk with Nick about being in the Flaming Lips and how that plays into how Color Music thinks about making music. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Nick Lay and Ryan Hendricks of Color Music. Sitting here with Ryan Hendricks and Nick Lay of Color Music. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello, hello.
You guys just released, or are going to release officially on Monday, Swimsuit, your new album. Something that you've been really teasing out for a while. And I just want to kind of talk about the album, the unique process that you're releasing this with, and a few other things. First, let's talk about the album and the sounds that we're hearing on this album. And there's a lot of sound on the album. I noticed specifically there's some organ sounds happening. There's some like glitchy drum sounds maybe that are happening. And this is all if I'm hearing it right.
Great so far.
A lot of overdubs on vocals. So when you create a record like this, do you kind of create a roadmap or a structure for it? Or is it something that you just kind of go in, start adding a few things here and there and see what comes out and try to create a theme?
Well, it's usually, I'd say, especially with this record, it's about creating a feeling. You know, there's a feeling that is the roadmap of the record, but you have to discover that feeling. So we started writing this really right after May You Marry Rich. We were really already writing. We were like, playing around, we think B-sides or something like that. Yeah. Or like, hey, we should do this live. And starts one thing, and you're kind of like, I remember because when we did May You Marry Rich, it was such a kind of heavy record that we were like, we need to kind of like loosen up a little bit. Like, this is a little too uptight. And so so we started writing some songs that were us loosening up to be a little less uptight. I don't know if you remember on Dynasty, like the first versions of it, because it had that guitar riff that... Anyway. Okay. So it started like that, and it was like kind of like a rock song. And then it was just like, well, this is too dumb. You know, we're like, this is... You know, after a while, you're kind of like, this is too dumb. This isn't, you know, what we're trying to do. And the feeling of what, you know, like the album just kind of, it's not like we were trying to write an album. Then all of a sudden, like, we're like, oh, I think we're writing an album. And, you know, I'm not sure how much I guess I'll just tell you, I lost a lot of friends during this. I lost friends during this period. And so I was depressed and I was mourning friends. And I was also mourning people in my life that I know or I'm going to lose. I was thinking, this is not over with. This process of people disappearing is going to continue. And the person that I go to bed with every night, who I love more than anything, someone's going to take us apart. And can I write music that helps me mourn this? And so that was, I know it's a gloomy mood, but that was the mood of the record, you know? And so Swimsuit, like the title, probably not a very Color Music title because it's not that funny, but it's kind of like, I think of swimsuits as kind of like band-aids for nakedness, right? You put on a swimsuit and there's this idea of protection, right? You get out in the water and it just felt right. And that word came to us during May You Marry Rich.
It did, yeah.
I think we even said, hey, this would be kind of a good title for something, but it didn't stick with that record, but it kind of lingered. And then when all the kind of the nasty stuff was happening, it really became a defining feature sonically. So that's how we do it, is just like the sounds are about trying to create a certain feeling that we're going for.
Okay. So you start with the feeling and just mess around with sounds and try to figure out what that is like. It's very similar to kind of your early stuff.
I write vocal melodies first.
Okay.
Actually. I mean, okay. I didn't used to do that, but like for this record, I did do that.
Yeah.
And that was the big thing for me, was to usually... I got a drum beat from Nick Lay, and then that felt good. And then I just kind of just start figuring out, like, I'd have a sound, like, usually it was where I was really crazy about using the organ for some reason. Start with an organ, and then I think the organ, the reason I like the organ is because it's underused. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't hear a lot of organ.
Yeah, it's peppered in, like, in a tasteful way, but
right. We
don't really hear it taking the forefront a lot.
And sometimes not tasteful.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Sometimes some nasty organ.
I should say a traditional organ.
Anyway, and it's a pipe organ sound, so it's like that's not used a lot. And so I like, I've always liked that sound. It's actually the sound we used on You For Leaving Me. If you listen to You For Leaving Me, that was the organ sound.
Yeah.
And it's just something that kind of, oh, that's a cool sound. You got a bigness to organ, you know, and that's always been like a, one of our kind of part of our vocabulary was bigness. And so there was a bigness to organs that we, that made a lot of sense. And kind of overdid the bass on May You Marry Rich, you know, like the sort of deep.
Yeah, we figured out what we had with Pink and then kind of like exploded it.
Right.
Okay, with, I think we've done
with
it.
May You Marry Rich. And so with this record, it was sort of like this felt like this was sort of the centerpiece of the sound was the organ. And so I just kind of jam on, and I'm not a keyboard player at all. So it was just kind of like learning how to do that and then sing. And so it'd be drum, organ, vocal, and then the song would be built out of that.
Okay. Yeah, what I was starting to say earlier, like some of your early EPs, especially like the Red EP, mm-hmm. the Yellow EP, the idea from what I remember is the standpoint was try to come up with sounds that reflected that color, right?
Yeah.
And here you're going with a feeling and trying to come up with sounds and melodies that
it's the reflect
blues,
that,
right?
Man.
Yeah, it's the blues.
It's the blues, man. Singing the blues.
I still get to have a sense of humor in there.
Right. I mean, it was.
I think we found that again, too, over the last 4 years. We had a lot of really fun like sound experiments we were doing because, like you said, you would start with vocals and things like that. So he and I would maybe meet up, you know, in a studio at the school and just come up with the most absurd ideas to try, you know, or try to make something work with just he and I, guitar and drums. Like, is there something there?
Mm-hmm.
So we went through a lot of those different things and we didn't really know that we were kind of writing another album, like you said, but
yeah,
we got there.
Let's talk a little bit about the, let's say, unconventional approach for release of the album. Tell me a little bit about what you did and the ideas or the freedom, confusion, all that behind releasing the record this way.
I mean, we learned a lot over the years and being fortunate enough to be on labels and things that we loved about it and things that we didn't love about it. But I think one of our main things was, if the music is ours, we kind of never give up on it, right? And the artists themselves, it's hard to give up on something. You have to move on. You have to continue to create. But there's still something in there. You know, maybe we can keep pumping it. And all the tools at our disposal anymore, and both of us being, you know, music business lecturers, it didn't feel comfortable to us anymore to do those things and to kind of give over, I guess, maybe control of an album cycle or something like that. And now, we just really want to find out who's, you know, still interested in color music, and it's been working so far.
Right, and I guess if I add a couple of things.
Yeah.
One is, you know, most bands, indie bands like us, who put out a record, don't make any money with the release of it through a record label. They just don't. So the commitment level, so someone puts out a record that they've spent 2-3 years on and really puts, you know, a part of themselves in that record, you know, and then the record comes out and it doesn't meet the sales expectations, they stop promoting it. And so for the artist, it's a bummer because it's like, well, it's still alive to me. I still love this thing. And I'd like to keep, you know, focusing on this. I want people to hear these songs. And the people who are investing that are going to say, hey, we're not going to invest in this anymore because we're not making what we're supposed to get out of it. But the artist, you know, they end up not really, you know, they might sell, you know, a couple thousand if they did pretty well. They're not seeing any. That's not going to come back to them. So it's kind of, it's a weirdly weird thing. Like when Marry You, Marry Rich came out, it's weird to me to be promoting it and going like every single time somebody buys this, I know I'm not actually seeing it. It's like I'm working for something. It's like the chocolate bars, you know, like when you're selling chocolate bars as a kid and you get that money that you come from selling, you're like, I have to give this to someone else. That's how I felt. I was like, why? And then there were some screw ups, you know, and you're kind of like, well, why are we hiring people to do this? And I mean, I hope this doesn't come to England. They'll probably hear. But anyway.
No, I mean, the screw-ups don't really have as much to do with the label. It's just like, it's control. You give up control. And to be, I mean, and everybody who's ever worked with us would totally agree that we have to have control. And if we don't, we'd rather forego opportunity than to not do it our way. And it doesn't make us for great bed partners, you know, in business. True. And instead of, I don't think we'd be wasting other people's time, but if we knew that there was going to be some sort of cap on what we could try to promote a record, it's pretty discouraging after doing it for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So this time it was like, we don't necessarily know what we're doing, but let's try it. Let's try all these things out. Let's find out who still cares about us and let's give them everything, and then worry about the rest later.
And what he's saying there is all, what's also about trying it is it's fun.
Yeah, it got fun again, man.
It's fun. Let's try it and have fun with this thing. And because that's what we've always been about. And I think that like Color Music, we first started, we were really fun. Like you know, we would sell CDs and, you know, use books and all this kind of stuff. And then you have the official album.
Yeah.
Right. And there's something about the official album that's kind of not as fun. Right. But you're doing it because you're signed. Yeah. Right. And that's yeah. how that is processed.
It's an act as if. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, and those records are sound scanned and all that kind of stuff. So that's important, I guess. But there's something that's lost when you're not doing it in the way when you go, we're going to do it like this because that's cool.
Yeah, sure.
And so that's what he and I have been kind of like, this is our mission statement was, hey, let's do it. If it's cool, let's do it.
Yeah. I think a couple of years ago, it would have been like, we're going to do this ourselves. And now it's more like we understand we're hard to work with, so we're just going to do this ourselves. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We're not victim. There's no more of the victim mentality that's so common and gross among bands.
That's like,
it's so true. I didn't sell enough records. The label's fault. It's my manager's fault. Man. It's all these different things.
Hate him.
We take complete responsibility. It's like, but we're just not going to do that again.
He's right. Either. We're not good business partners.
I'm here in the studio with Nick Lay and Ryan Hendricks of Color Music. We're talking about their new album, Swimsuit. I guess I should also mention to you listeners, this album, you know, I mentioned the long tease out, and my initial hearing of it was, I think this might be an album. I don't know what they're doing. You know, there was an Instagram, like a bunch of pictures representing what the album cover, I guess, would be, or some of the pictures from the album cover
the
shoot,
tiled,
right?
Yeah, the tiled swimming pool photos, yeah.
Sure, but there was like no messages, I think, behind it at all. And so it just got people kind of interested. And I think that was like that carrot that you're dangling out there of like, instead of here's our new song, listen to it, and we know there's an album coming. It's like, you don't know what's coming. Here's something to get you kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. Did you guys get a good response from that? And what did you learn from just kind of this process of doing it your own?
I mean, I think we got a good response from it. A lot of it, I think, was kind of predictable. The people that sniff for things like that, like you and like other people from local press and that know Color Music, they were all asking questions and comments and things like that. And we were silent, of course. But I don't think we really knew what we were doing. We just needed to tell people that we still exist, you know, and get them to maybe, hey, take a look at our feed again. You know, all those things, the algorithms, the more people that are there, the more people that will see them, those sorts of things. But really now what I figured out is that we honed in on exactly who's still really, really interested. And that, having a baseline for us to work from for that and celebrate those people, that's kind of been my major goal. But I found that after the fact. I don't really know what we were doing at the time. We were just trying to do it our way that didn't feel gross. You know, it didn't feel, hey, look at me. You know, we'll die for a new fan.
Please.
You know, it's not that we don't want new fans. We don't want to try and cater to the entire world. We just want to cater to the people that care about what we're doing.
Yeah, you know? Color Music fans.
Yeah.
Both of you also teach music business. And so I'm interested from this standpoint of being able to you know what it's like to work with a label and with management and all that. And now that you're kind of almost purposely reverting back to like early days of being a band, are there things that you're learning that you're like, oh man, now we have to tell students of like how we did this and what we saw and just like try to tell your tale, I guess, to the students?
Oh yeah. I mean, that for me, that happens naturally anyway.
Sure.
Our students learn way more from our failures, and it's funny in class anyway, right? Than they'll ever learn from successes. Maybe I don't know. Maybe if we can repeat something, then we can start talking about successes, but
success is a tough thing to talk about because a failure, you can really be like, I did this and this is what happens. And so it's clear, but like even records that are successful, like, so like when we talk about social media, the thing that drives me crazy about social media is, you know, you get on YouTube, there's a million people telling you how to get more followers. Well, everybody's doing the same thing, right? So then it becomes really phony, right? So you have these outliers, these few people who do certain things, they become successful with it. can another person repeat that without thinking and it be the same thing? And a lot of times the answer is no. So success is a tough thing to teach about, but failures are easy to teach about because you can be like, I did this and it didn't work, you know? Yeah. And a lot of times the things that make something successful can be intangible.
Yeah.
That you don't get to decide, you know, and that's the tough thing about music business is that the people who win, a lot of people win, have something that they didn't, a gift they had that very few people had.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's especially when you're talking with young people and trying to, you know, give them a set of terms to use. I try to switch progress with success because success to me seems like an endpoint. And I feel like I'm part of a generation, or at least in what you and I are doing, I don't really want to quit. You know, we can change the way that we do it. Maybe we don't tour as much. Maybe, you know, have all these different sort of revenue streams from different things. But that was built on the American dream that you retire, you know, in your 60s, and then you live out your retirement, your golden years or whatever. It's like, I'm already doing what I want to do forever. Yeah, Why would I ever want to quit? So. Yeah. Progress, I think, and it's measurable, you know,
sure.
Instead of success, which is subjective to everyone, right?
Yeah. I heard an interview, I think it was Mark Maron's podcast with the Beastie Boys, where they're talking about first albums, License to Ill.
Yeah.
First album.
Mm-hmm. First big.
Yeah, yeah. So they mentioned, you know, I guess they've had some legal troubles over the past about that, just not getting the money that they were owed.
Yeah, from Def Jam.
And Rick Rubin kind of put it to him of like, you guys were able to continue doing your career the way you wanted to do it after that. I was able to continue producing the way I wanted to after that. And Russell Simmons got a check.
That's it. Russell
we
got a check.
We all got what we wanted.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get everything that we thought we were owed. It doesn't mean that wasn't great.
It's such an important point. You know, because at the time to them, they could be mad about it. It might influence decisions that they're making and things like that. But when you look back, you start to realize like that was a good scenario, you know,
sure.
And we know how record labels work. You have to make your money back, this and that. But it's obviously some mismanagement there as well.
Sure.
But the greatest part about it is, yeah, they got the career that they wanted. And yeah, maybe we're not counting SoundScan on our records right now. And we're not doing it the way maybe we're circumventing the music business a little bit with some of these services that we can control, you know, but the idea is when you get to that place where, you know, you should have been sound scanning because then we could take these numbers and submit you for a Grammy or this and that. There's kind of a funny way of getting around things when people want to give you an award, when they want to do something really great for you, all those sort of things. I'd rather just go, well, you know, I fed my kids for several years. Like, I don't care about sound scan, you know, those sorts of things. That's the type of goal for us. And if all of a sudden the industry needs those numbers or something. This is a funny way of just making things happen.
I think you guys are kind of talking about the theme of swimsuit too. I'm not kidding. I mean, cool. I'd say happiness to me is two things, is being grateful, feeling grateful.
Yeah.
Oh, this is getting real cheesy.
No, it's all right.
Feeling grateful and then being fascinated, right? So like you're grateful for the things that you have. You're aware that they're going to disappear and you have it now, so you should enjoy it while you can. And also being fascinated about how crazy the world is, you know, and just being, just staring at it. But like when you're talking about like this kind of stuff and slicing it up, like I would say that one thing that has changed with us over time is how we've measured success.
Yeah.
We don't measure success the same way we did when we were starting out in like 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
Now measuring success is honestly finishing swimsuit. You know, the next records that we're doing, it's getting those things, making those actually happen and put them in the world, put in the universe. To me, that's the real achievement that I'm really proud of. And everything else that comes after that is really cool. And, you know, and people get it, great. But really, it's about that music. That's what I'm grateful for, is that I can, that we can actually continue to do this. And as soon as we're gone, he and I are gone,
yeah,
the music's gone. This music, this one type. Yeah. Weirdo music is gone forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that because, you know, obviously you guys, like, what, 2004, 2005, that you said, it's been, what, 14 years or so.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard. I think 2000, I feel like there was some activity in 2002, 2003. It's kind of hard to pinpoint because when Turner was in, well, he still is. I mean, it's not like we ever had a firing of Nick Turner.
No.
He lives in England. It's kind of hard to, like, make that work.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we're trying out this new thing called email, but
yeah, it doesn't work. But But like he would come and disappear, so we would kind of not be doing something for like 9 months because he was gone. So anyway, sorry.
Well, you know, it started out what I think there's initial five.
Yeah, we
people
were five
kind
piece.
Of yep. in the band, and now it's essentially whittled down to you two.
It's two. I know.
Well, I mean, but things have changed. I guess is my overall point. And you know, as years go on and as you get older. Also, priorities change. And yeah. like
well, my drug addiction has just driven everyone away. Okay.
It's caffeine intake is off the charts.
Let's just get straight with it. Okay. And, you know, and I can't keep the studio clean. Okay. Yeah. So, all these things are Nick's the only one who can put up with it.
That's why I have my own studio.
That's right. Yeah. It's like people can't stand it. And so, that's what's driven people away. So,
but the priorities do change for a band over years. And, like, from the time that you guys were, you know, a baby band to totally. Now, like, just how do the priorities change for the band and what you expect to get out of making something or performing for someone? Like,
you know what, it's actually more idealistic now, but it hasn't changed much. When I listen to our old records myself, I hear a group that is trying so hard to be the best that they can be. And so we wear our weaknesses on the sleeve. You know, anybody hears like what's not working, but we tried so hard to like pull it off and have the best records. That's not changed. We're still the same. And we wouldn't do it if we weren't doing that. Like we're still as, you know, like when we're talking about music and stuff, it's always, we always have to remind each other, like, tell me exactly how you feel. No BS. Okay. How do you really feel about the music? Is this weak? You know, the thing that'll hurt my feelings is that you are trying to play to my feelings. Yeah. You know, that hurts my feelings.
Yeah.
I want to know what are we doing wrong? Well, I mean, when the first thing I walked into you is like, what do you think? I want to know. I want to know because I want us to be the best band that we possibly can be.
Sure.
For sure.
But yeah, I think a lot of that was us moving the finish line a little bit from after the release and the success that the album had monetarily or critically or whatever. It's like we just moved it to, we succeeded when we released it. You know, that's where we're really, really happy. And maybe some of that fascination and that play is what's happening right now in us releasing. Like this is like, okay, cool. You know, we'll learn from this. We'll do something different. You know, it's like we're not going to lose, you know, hundreds of thousands of album sales or something like that. We're just having fun.
You know, so many bands that I see break up after usually one of two things, a big tour that doesn't go well or an album that they spend for, you know, becomes their own Chinese democracy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems like an intense process that once you are done, it's this. We did that.
Yeah.
We did that. And
we
what
love
we do
it.
After
we
here
love
is bonus.
Doing it. Yeah. I mean, that's not our challenge.
We'd spend, you know, a few years making a record and put it out, and then it would only, you know, really be promoted for a few months, and then it was over, and that was hard to take.
Here's the question. What would break us up?
What would break us up?
Yeah.
Graceland. Going to Graceland in Memphis.
That's an inside joke.
We almost got in a fist fight on tour one time. It was the end of a long tour. Yeah.
It's a Paul Simon song, too.
Yeah, yeah. But on that same note, I just want to hit. I was listening to a friend the other day on a podcast, actually, and he was talking about the Minutemen, and they were a working class band. And they would do all these things to really cater to their fans who were working class fans. So they'd make their shows earlier in the night, you know, so that people could actually have a good time and get in bed and go back to work and, you know, hopefully come see another 100 shows of theirs or whatever. But they also always adamantly maintained day jobs, you know, Wayne did from the Lips, all that stuff. And you look at the, like, kind of a weird value in that, whereas being at ACM, I had a dad of a prospective student ask me, he was like, we're here for the tour. Down the street, I got a coffee. And the girl who gave me my coffee is a graduate of the school. What do you have to say about that? I said, well, she's an aspiring musician. She should be having a job like that that is basically manual labor, and she can write songs. She can write her marketing campaign in her head all day long. They don't get her brain. They just get her serving a cup of coffee, you know? So a lot of judgment that you get from that sort of thing, but it's so important because of the way that we set our sights and our careers. You know, I'm sure we both went through this. Well, I'm not making enough money. You know, I can't have a house. I can't do this. I can't do that. But we always knew that this was what we wanted to do forever. So we were always side hustling, making sure that we had a way to leave town, to go on tour, all these sorts of things. And college students, you know, they look at you about get a manual labor job and they look at you like you're crazy. Like, why am I getting this degree? And it's like, well, It's just a little bit different out there, and nobody's going to tell you you're a genius or buy a million records from you immediately. It's going to take a long time. So these are ways to set that up, and you hedge a little bit of disappointment, I think, that way. And the fact that, like, I'm going to have a job for a really long time. I think that was the first thing that Booker ever said to us. And, of course, it just went right over my head. I was like, yeah, yeah, but not us. Yeah, yeah. You guys are going to have a day job for a really long time. Like, yeah, but not us. But, and then now that we've kind of grown to accept it and know that it's important that we have these, you know, two different sides, and it drives us to do that. It's pretty great.
Plus, I mean, it's interesting you talking about that because you know you play the Flaming Lips. So yeah. So and the thing is what I found interesting is how many people who are so called successful who are doing it who are just as miserable now, maybe miserable more, because they are successful because the success becomes a box that boxes them in, and I think that. What we're trying to do, what we're aspiring to do, is to make something that is a pure art. And we've never succeeded. We haven't done it yet. We are failures. Every record's another failure. We haven't done it, but we're striving to be pure artists. And to be a pure artist, I think that you have to struggle to some extent in life. And you have to have, you can't become a caricature of yourself. Otherwise, you are going to get boxed in. And so I think that those dreams I had when I was younger, if they had come true, would have actually made me less of an artist.
Yeah.
And so I'm cool. I have no problem. Where I'm at, sitting at right now, doing what I'm doing now, no complaints. Just want to make it better than what we're doing. I want to push myself further.
It's like our inside joke of open forever. We don't want to headline shows. Let's open shows forever, man. It's so much more fun.
You get done earlier. And,
yeah. Everything's great about it.
Pressure's not on yet. Yeah.
But at the same time, that's my personal journey. Yeah. So I have a student that's singing pop music or whatever. I'm not going to tell them that because that doesn't make any sense for what they're doing.
No, not at all.
There's a different path for them. Yeah. But the path for us is a path that has been based a lot of it on experience, you know, seeing what we did and what other people did and kind of getting a sense of how the music life treated them. And also really coming down on what's the most important thing that we do. Right. And there are two things. It's the music we're making and the live show. Can we make those better? Can we take it further? Yeah. And we're still really ambitious to push it further.
Sure. You mentioned the students and student working at the coffee shop and everything like that. I think that's not just a music thing, though. I had a public relations degree. I've never worked a day in public relations. Like my first job out of college was working at a bookstore.
Exactly.
Lifting books. And heck, I didn't even get into radio until 8-9 years ago. But it's that journey that you kind of have to go on to figure out what you're good at and what actually works.
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
Okay. Why did you start this process, this whole project, Oklahoma Rock?
Oklahoma Rock?
Yeah.
Oklahoma Rock and...
Like all like of it. Like you start radios because you started Oklahoma Rock. Why did you do this? Why does the show exist? Why do you do this?
So Oklahoma Rock, the website initially started back in 2003 when I got laid off from a job. I had tons of free time, and I was going to a lot of shows. I was hitting a lot of, drown nights in Norman, right?
Yeah.
But I was going to a lot of shows, but I didn't know where to go to a show. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know what shows were happening. So that's how that initially started. The radio thing, and I always thought that was interesting. I had a small little radio thing in college. Mm-hmm. But, man, as soon as Ferris started back up at the Spy, and when I heard about it in 2009, I was like, he needs a local show. And I'm going to get that local show. Email out of the blue. Mm-hmm. And it's just been off and running since. But it's fun for me because it's a medium that I wanted to always play around with and I was always interested in. And then the music that I saw on a daily basis.
Do you consider yourself a historical figure?
Historical figure.
You know you are. You are a historical figure now. You realize that. Like if when you look at the Oklahoma music history, right? There's going to be an Oklahoma Rock section because you have become the centerpiece of Oklahoma music, right? It's the marketplace is going through you. Where else is it going? It's going through you. Everything goes through you.
It's
going
to be hard for him to admit this.
I know. You can't. You better not. You are a historical figure now in Oklahoma music. So
well, I appreciate that. There's a lot of there's a lot of history behind us, you know?
Yeah. I know.
So, yeah.
I know.
There's a lot of good people that have done a lot of good things, especially music historians. Dr. Hugh Foley, Dr. Guy Logsdon have done some great stuff. And yeah, so, well, I thank you for saying that. Very nice. One more big question that I had, and you mentioned, Nick, your involvement in the Flaming Lips as a drummer for what, the past 5 years or so?
It's like four and some change. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 2014, yeah.
And obviously the side project that you have with Matt Duckworth as well, as Brothers Green. Tell me a little bit about how you kind of keep focus on all the projects at the same time. I mean, being able to
jump back
and forth between projects.
Yeah, I still want to know that too. I'll tell you what I did. I was having a lot of trouble balancing it all, right? And I asked Derek Brown, who does a lot of similar things that I do. You know, works at ACM, is a full-time position, travels with the Lips.
Full-time has dad.
Exactly. Full-time dad. Has all these crazy things going on. And I was like, how do you do it all? Because, you know, I know people tell me I'm busy or say, hey, you're a busy dude. You do a lot of stuff. But I know I'm not as busy as you are. And you're making it. What's going on? He was like, well, you know, I really just do what screams at me. And that, honestly, it kind of automatically allowed me to take pressure off of things that didn't matter at the time. And some feedback that I got from Ryan, too, he was like, I know if you don't answer an email of mine very quickly, then it's not very important. And I it hurt me a little bit because I was like, you're always important to me. But at the same time, it's sort of like, no, you're exactly right. I literally just didn't have time to answer it until I answered it, you know, and that put him at ease because maybe that wasn't that important. He didn't have to worry about it that much. In reality, everybody wants to be busy, and I think that's a way that we I think we avoid a lot of despair by keeping ourselves busy. I mean, the country's falling apart. What, you know, the world's going to end because of global warming, and I think my just natural sort of state is to stay busy like that, but it was driving me crazy. So I would do the things that I needed to do at that moment. And if I can get ahead of things, I try, you know, I plan it out if I can, but not everything happens at once. You know, in Color Music, we stopped playing for 3.5-4 years, you know, in the middle of that started Brothers Green with Matt because I had more time than what I was spending on the Flaming Lips and on ACM. And so that kind of came up in the mix, but these things happen at different times from each other. You know, we have a little bit lighter with the gear with the Lips because we're, you know, making a record and we're doing a lot of really cool stuff with, I don't know if I can really talk about it. So, but we're doing cool stuff this year that might not be super heavy touring, right? So it allows time for that, allows me to do remixes, allows me to write new classes at ACM. It allows us to really get back in, rehearse, redo the live show, start a lighting show, all those sorts of things. So you have to do what screams at you, and you can sign up for a lot of things, but as long as you deliver, I mean, I don't have a ton of money. Only thing I have really in this business is my taste and my word, you know, and if I don't show up and do the things that I'm going to do, I stop getting offered them. So maybe that's, you know, kind of a natural way to end being busy, but
sure.
You just deliver and do what screams, man. That's all you can do.
Right. Well, you guys played a release show late last year. Are there any plans to do any more live shows in 2019?
Definitely, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely, okay. Yeah.
All right, February 8th, Guthstream Records.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's just, you know.
Yeah, we're going to be there in some capacity.
In Norman.
Yeah. In Norman, that's right.
Yeah.
And check our Instagram for the specific details of that. And definitely March 15th in Stillwater, our home base, the Land Run 100. We're going to be playing the Land Run 100, 5 o'clock.
That's free, the 100%. Bicycle race,
right? Yeah. Both those shows are free.
That's
great. Bicycle race.
That's going to be fun.
District bikes.
As they come across, you know, this insanely grueling finish line, we're going to be screaming at them.
That's, I was told that's been changed.
Okay.
But it'll be the big party, and right we'll be playing, and it's going to be cool to kind of play in Stillwater again. I'm excited about that.
That's great. So. All right. Anything? So the album comes out. The album in Swimsuit comes out Monday, February 4th.
Yeah.
You can get it at all major places that you normally can get it.
Bandcamp, iTunes, listen to it on
Spotify yeah.
Napster. I'm going to start pumping Napster, man.
Make it a comeback.
And we'll have vinyl.
They're the only one that's made money. The only streaming company that's made money is Napster.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Nick, Ryan, Color Music. Thanks, Ryan. Guys.
Thanks for having us, man. It's been
Thank
great.
You. It's been an honor to us.
Fun conversation there with Nick Lay and Ryan Hendricks of Color Music. Thanks to those guys for coming in. Their new 9-song album, Swimsuit, is available now and streaming everywhere you get music. It's also available for purchase everywhere you get music. Thanks for listening, and be sure to listen to the Oklahoma Rock Show every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on The Spy on KOSU.